and development. An international body that sets responsible standards for export lending for its members. As recently as 1999, nearly 100% of export credit was governed by its rules. By 2004, with the rise of Chinese exports, the share of export support governed by the OECD had fallen to roughly two-thirds. By 2013, the share had plummeted to one-third. If this trend continues and countries are allowed to finance export deals without limit, the United States will lose out. During its 8 decades of operation, the U.S. Export-Import Bank has financed a total of roughly $590 billion worth of U.S. exports. By contrast, over the past 2 years alone, China has financed at least $670 billion worth of exports. The actual sum, which is difficult to ascertain given China's lack of transparency, may well be close to $1 trillion. As exports have become more powerful drivers of growth, the stakes have increased. The McKinsey Global Institute projects that the world will need $60 trillion in infrastructure investments by 2030. The United States' foreign competitors are uniform in their recognition of what this means. In markets such as India, Latin America, the Middle East, and sub-Saharan Africa, there is an enormous opportunity for exports to spur economic growth and employment, available to any nation, not just any company, that is willing to do what it takes to win deals. Frequently, that means operating outside of any rules-based, transparent system. As chair of the Export-Import Bank, I have seen this race to the bottom firsthand. Last June, I met with officials from Transnet, the South African rail company, to discuss a locomotive manufacturing order that General Electric had split with a Chinese competitor. Since U.S. locomotives are globally recognized as being the highest in quality, I did not want financing to present an obstacle to securing the deal. After all, more locomotives made in the United States means more well-paying jobs in Erie, Pennsylvania, instead of China. Like any good businessman, I wanted to know what terms our competitors were offering. An official from Transnet told me that when Chinese firms come to the table, government financing is virtually always part of the package. In fact, the typical questions are, do you want a 10-year, 15-year, or 20-year loan? How about a grace period? More and more, U.S. businesses are competing not against their Chinese counterparts, but against China Incorporated. In South Africa, it was clear to me that Transnet had judged General Electric not solely on the quality of its locomotives, but also on its ability to offer competitive financing. Of course, export credit agencies are no replacement for the private sector, but with the push to implement major global banking reforms and the rising scale of global infrastructure projects, they are increasingly a vital supplement. As commercial banks oscillate in their willingness to extend credit, as they did most recently in the wake of the global financial crisis, the Export-Import Bank provides a dependable backstop for U.S. exporters. The reluctance of private banks to hold long-term debt for large export projects, such as the solar installations, nuclear power plants, and bridges that soon will be in high demand throughout the developing world, has created a gap that the Export-Import Bank was designed to fill. As private lenders have shied away from projects in developing markets, export credit agencies have stepped in. Last year, 68% of the Export-Import Bank's financing served projects in developing markets. The Export-Import Bank also supports small businesses whose razor-thin margins often deter private financers. The bank provides the backing necessary for smaller firms to tackle global markets until they grow large enough to become attractive to private lenders. In 2014, nearly 90% of the Export-Import Bank's transactions directly served small U.S. businesses. New players, new rules. As the United States engages in an internal political debate over the export